Yes, guys, what's good? You tuned into Mango Masala. My name's Gaines, and I'm here with Ellie of Art Not Evidence. How are you doing?
Hi, not too bad, not too bad.
So obviously, you are the founder of Art Not Evidence. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the campaign and also why there's such a need for it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the founder. I also say co-founder because I couldn't have founded it without like my amazing team. But founder of Art Not Evidence, we're a campaign working to stop the misuse of rap music as evidence in criminal trials. There's a massive need for this because of how much this issue is increasing. It's not only the rap and drill music that it's predominantly affecting, but I think we're seeing right now a massive increase in sort of the quelling of our freedom of expression generally as a population, but also other artists. We know what's going on with Kneecap and maybe Bob Dylan, although Kneecap just got their charges dropped, which is amazing news. But yeah, this issue's been going on in the UK, we know, since at least 2005. Happened in America and other countries for much longer. But essentially, creative expression, generally rap music made by young black people, is being used as evidence against them in a court of law. Most often when the lyrics, the music, has literally nothing to do with the crime alleged. Everyone sees the big stories in the newspaper that tell you like certain things are happening. Often those aren't true. In the times that they are true, it's a very small amount of the times that this music is being used as evidence. And I would encourage people not to believe things they read in the tabloids.
I completely agree with that, because I think the fact that this creative expression is being brought as evidence when, like you say, it literally has nothing to do with the actual crime at hand. Like, it's literally just an extra thing to add to almost like secure a lengthy sentence.
The issue is really that this music is just being used to bring racist stereotypes into the courtroom. That's what you mean when you say it secures the conviction, because it's really just that unfortunate cherry on the cake that people believe these stereotypes and that these rappers are scary and they're probably more likely to have done something criminal. And we've seen it work in cases where there's not really any real evidence either. Like you say, they just use this and they're like, rapper, scary, criminal, and that's it.
Definitely. So in that line, would you say that this is effectively upholding institutional racism?
Oh, 1,000,000%. I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of institutional racism in our legal system. They haven't admitted that, surprisingly. But it's a large part of that. The fact that they can use this music, we've looked and we've tried to find other forms of music or other forms of expression that have to be used as evidence. And they're really occasional. And if they have attempted to be used, it's been thrown out. Whereas routinely, rapid drill music is being used to paint a picture of these young people in a certain way. And it just shows, because they really don't like, we want there to be like experts in court. We want there to be independent experts who can explain to judges and juries, who are often predominantly white and middle class and middle aged, explain to them about the culture and conventions of this music and how there's lots of cultures and conventions, right, that they don't understand. And they don't really seem to understand why that is absolutely necessary for them to get a fair trial. So it very much is a continuation of the racism that we see in our system.
That's so true, actually. I hadn't even thought about the fact that the people that are deciding this, the people that are handing out these sentences, often will have no idea of the socio-political, socio-economic, socio-cultural situations that so many of the people that are being convicted are actually in. Why would they know that? Like, they're so far removed from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't seem to understand and or care. I mean, we've seen this starts from the beginning. It starts with the police, right? The police have lots of interest in looking at rappers than they have projects that look into these things and da da da. And it starts there, and the rappers, when it's affecting actual artists themselves, because it affects people who aren't artists as well. But the actual artists are like, how are you? I'm making this music talking about my experience or other experiences that I've heard of, or just things that go on around me, and telling stories and making music. And that's giving, I'm making money, I'm changing my life, I'm getting into new experiences. Who doesn't want to do that? And then they're using that to pull me back down and put me in prison. And then even when I'm out of prison, put me on crazy behavior orders and license conditions that mean that then I can't make the music in the same way I used to. So it's a really messed up cycle that's going on all the way around. Unfortunately, it's such a complex issue with lots of different elements that intertwine. And to get your head around it is a lot. So I think people are always like, oh, wow, I didn't know that this is the way it happens. And I'm like, well, a lot of people don't. Like, it's really, it's part of what we're trying to do as Art and Evidence, to spread the word of that and stop the misconceptions that everyone thinks that the only times this happens is when someone self-snitches.
Yeah, or when someone's actually has done something bad.
Like, yeah. Yeah, which I would like to clarify that, because a lot of people who have an issue with our campaign is because they don't understand exactly what we're advocating for. But we're advocating for a change in law that would heighten the threshold of what can be used, put in safeguards, but not to completely stop any creative expression ever. As you say, in any of those small amount of cases where someone did do something and then they've said, oh, I did this here, there, with that, where, here, what, where? Do you know what I mean? And you're saying what you've done, and like, that's a confession. That's a true confession. That's a silly thing to do. I've said on many panels and things, don't do that. That's dumb. But in those cases, if the prosecution could argue correctly to the court that this is relevant to other evidence, to what's going on, that it's relevant, it's not bringing those racist stereotypes in, if it's actually legit.
Oh, they simply liked drill and rap music, which we argue glorifies violence, therefore they must be evil, essentially, and must go to prison.
Yes, that is actually what's happening.
Yeah, and how is that? It's, when you say it like that as well, it's so obvious. It's like, how is that allowed to happen? And like you say, how can it be that there's no safeguards already? Do you know what I mean? Like, how can that be okay? And I think it then, again, points to the fact that, well, maybe it's because people actually don't really care. Like, when they were bringing this in, like, they don't actually care about the impact this is going to have, let alone a fact like that it's actually a disadvantage to them as well, because our prisons are overcrowded enough as it is anyway. Like, why would you want to put people in prison that don't actually need to be there?
It is really one of the ones that that is something that I question a lot, because rap music is used a lot in, like, cases, in, like, joint enterprise cases, where essentially you can be charged for a crime even if you were associated in some way, guilt by association. And there's been cases in Manchester that a lot of people know about, Manchester 10, Manchester 11, Moss Side 11, where people have been pulled in and got charged with murder or grievous bodily harm or something, a very serious crime, when their loose connection was music or knowing someone or something like that. And like you say, it's literally just flimsy evidence bringing multiple, generally young boys, black boys, to prison. And you're like, we haven't got room for all these kids. Like, they should be elsewhere. But it leads to something more sinister in your mind, naturally, doesn't it? It's like, well, this isn't happening to other, it's just happening to young black and mixed race boys from the inner city.
Yeah, definitely. And just to touch again on what you said, obviously, about the Manchester 10 case, obviously, like you say, that's something that's very familiar to particularly people in and around Manchester. They will have seen about this that's been going on for the past, like, 5 years, I want to say now, since the initial, because I think the initial murder that kind of sparked the group chat that happened, like, I want to say, like, November 2020, I feel like it was. So, yeah, like, nearly 5 years. And in that case as well, obviously, we know that so many of the convictions were based on the idea that these people, well, first of all, they were part of a group chat that exchanged messages following this death, which was alleged to be plotting revenge. But then also the fact that they were members of M40, which they have said repeatedly is a drill collective, yet it was characterized as being, oh, this is a gang, even though so many of them said this is not a gang, this is just a drill collective that we're in and we like to make music together. And even one of the Manchester 10 that actually was, thankfully, their conviction was quashed, and it was on the basis that the part of the evidence that was put against them was that they were literally just in a music video. And it was, oh, you're in this music video, therefore you are violent, essentially. It was quashed because it was found out actually that it wasn't him that was in the music video, which, first of all, is like, how did you make that mistake? How did you convict someone without thoroughly checking that? But then also it's the fact that if their conviction was able to be quashed simply because, oh, they weren't in a music video, that to me suggests that that is the sole basis on which they are being effectively sent to prison. It's mad.
It's such a, like, awful, horrible case, and that, you know, amazing groups like Kids of Colour still, like, fighting to try and get justice for the other boys whose sentences, like, haven't been quashed. But, like, the crazy thing is that, yeah, the, like, other charities that we work for, like Justice, who are, like, a big human rights charity, they put in, I can't remember the term, interventions. So they basically provide loads more evidence and things to the judge to say, this music should have never been used. This is very racist. Loads of multiple other things that wasn't just the music in this case, but it, like you say, it held a big part of what happened. And all of that was ignored in the Court of Appeal. No mention of, oh yeah, we probably shouldn't have used the music. All of that was ignored. And unfortunately, yeah, the only reason that Ade is free and walking the streets right now is because one of the lawyers managed to find the boy who is in that video. And it wasn't even a music video. It was like a video of like him rapping along to a song. Like just, you know what I mean? Like a Snapchat video or whatever. And that he managed to find the boy who it was. And that boy, God bless him, came to the court and said, that's me, not Ade. And that's the only reason that he is walking free, not any of the other injustices that have been discussed and were involved. And I think it's a crazy thing about our system as well. And I understand why the concept exists, but conspiracy to do something is just such a weak, it's like a conspiracy, like nothing ever really happened. The things that they said that they conspired to do. And then you can get put in prison for 8+ years.
I think surely if you're going to arrest someone and put someone in prison for conspiracy, surely there needs to be actual action. And I'm not saying that you need to wait until they've actually committed the crime that they're supposedly conspiring to commit, but maybe at least some kind of evidence that shows motion was put in place in order for what supposedly these people are saying was actually going to happen, right? Because again, anyone can say anything online nowadays, and yet it's repeatedly only these people that we find that are actually facing the consequences of it.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it is very much a certain group of people that are being, their expression is being taken in a way that others would be ignored. Same thing, there was a case recently that some members of our team were involved in, where like a woman was charged with like malicious, I can't remember, but she was charged with like malicious communications or something, because she like, she's a black woman and she like joke tweeted the N-word to someone, to like a sort of popular figure of some kind. And that somehow that got reported. How many things I've reported racist things on Twitter more times than I could ever say. I don't even go on there anymore, because every time I would just get an email saying this is fine. And somehow that got to the police and she got charged for using a word, and they had to get all these experts in to talk about how like she used it in the new form and it's not racist because she's like, just insane stuff that she had to go through, like mind-blowing stuff. Like that's the stuff that it's only used against certain people, and she now had to go through an awful court case for obviously no reason.
You mentioned before about trying to find other examples of where this type of thing is happening, say with other demographics of people or even music. And it really, the obvious example that comes to my mind is like metal, death metal. Some of the lyrics in that are, I would argue,
much more violent than what you will hear in more extreme drill verses. And yet, I don't think I've ever heard anything about any investigation into some of the what I would argue to be quite vulgar language that is used in it. And it's kind of just understood like, oh, it's just artistic expression, like actually makes people feel X, Y, Z, which I'm like, each to their own. Like, that genre can kind of exist and just continue without any fear of kind of like interference in any way. And to me, the obvious reason for that is because when I think of metal, death metal, whatever, ultimately, I do kind of think of it as being associated largely with white people, as opposed when it comes to rap, drill, etc. You think that it's to do with black people. But that to me is the obvious difference, and why I personally believe that we don't see it in any other music.
Yeah, I'd absolutely have to agree. White people are just allowed to have their artistic license. They're allowed to spread their wings creatively and not be presumed. It's also tough in the sense that rap music has always had, again, culturally, like, speaking in the first person and putting on personas and characters, and it being like, I did this, I did that, I'm real, I'm authentic, is very important to the genre. And because of, like, the media and the stories that we've had from hip-hop in America up to drill and stuff now, people very much believe that all of that is true. It's very much presumed. People like, oh, well, then it must be true. They come from these environments and they say these things and da-da-da-da. And it's just so, they don't really understand that they could be telling a story, that they're twisting stories that they've been told. It's obviously not all 100% true confessions. And somehow that has reached not just a presumption in popular culture, but our actual courtrooms, and people are going to prison for a long time for it. And I think that is obviously the main problem of a lack of understanding and care. It's really interesting. Something that we're here talking because we just did our fundraiser the other day, which went really well. I'm really excited to not have to put on an event for a while, but it went really well and I'm very happy. Thanks to everyone who came. But something we haven't 100% decided, but something we're thinking about spending some of the money on is doing some more research, because there's not been enough research into this issue in the UK specifically. And there's a really interesting study that they've done in America, essentially, where they gave three groups of people an identical set of lyrics, which were taken from a 1940s folk song. I think it talks about shooting someone or murder or something like that. And they told one group that the lyrics were heavy metal lyrics. They told one group that the lyrics were country lyrics. And they told the other group that they were rap lyrics. And then they asked them all the same set of questions about what they thought this person was like, what they thought maybe their race was, what they thought they were capable of, were they capable of murder, etc., etc., a whole group of questions like that. And then they scored them on, like, essentially a bad character rating, which is ironic because it's not actually something that exists in the US system, but we have bad character as, like, an actual thing in the UK system, which they use the drill music a lot to say he's of bad character and therefore more likely to have committed this crime. But as you can imagine, the people who thought that these lyrics were heavy metal or country did not think that the person was as violent or capable of murder as the people who thought it was rap music. And then also the older someone was, the more likely they thought they were to be more violent, et cetera, et cetera, regardless of the genre. So it really, like, quite interestingly just strips out all that other stuff we're talking about, right? And just goes to, this is how it works. Older people think that if you're associated with rap music, you are more likely to be a criminal. And they call it in the study essentially rap as a racial signifier. So you can't go into a court, well, I'm sure people do, but you can't go into court anymore and say he's black, therefore he's dangerous and a criminal. But you can go into a courtroom and say he makes rap music, and all those inferences are still there.
The reason why we see this so much in rap music, aside from what you said, obviously, about that it's so much in the first person, it's all about kind of like lived experience, it is because obviously it started out and continues to be kind of a reflection of the environment in which so many of these black rappers come from, which is of a lower social economic background, which is of effectively often being surrounded by crime. And you're kind of just, you're speaking about what you are being surrounded by. And arguably, like, having a creative output for that is the best thing that can actually happen, rather than potentially being sucked into that. And I would also argue as well that, I don't think this is the case, but does the government have the same energy for actually improving the quality of life for these people so that they aren't one step away from, like, effectively being sucked into crime? Like, where's the energy for that? If you're so bothered about actually preventing crime, then why are you so focused on incarcerating people as opposed to actually stopping the actual cause of it in the first place?
100%, 100%. There is definitely less, in my opinion. Like, they don't have to, the police and government don't really have to prove things. Like, the police continue to get more money for their projects where they look into drill music and look at social media accounts online and da-da-da-da. And look into and getting rid of music videos. Yeah, there's no actual, they've never had to prove there's like a cause or a correlation between the, you know, increase in drill or rap music and violence. You know, they've never had to prove those things. People have attempted to prove that it's not, and we've tried to show that to them. They don't care. It's not, they don't have to, do you know what I mean? They make the decisions and they don't have to do those things. And they definitely don't care about their well-being or changing those things. It unfortunately it works for the structure that they love to live in. They like the status quo as it is. And it's just really sad that not more people get it. Not even just the police, just in like this level above, you know. Like, I got into this because I work in the music industry. And when I first spoke to one of the academics who's sort of the OG in this whole thing, she's done a lot of research and getting together experts to work in court and stuff. Ethna Quinn, an amazing woman. The first time I spoke to her, she was like, oh my God, you're the first person from the music industry to ever contact me about this. I mean, apart from a guy who managed drill rappers, I'll say that. And I was just like, little old me, like, how is that possible? Like, and then I really thought so many other people from the music industry would care and want to work with us. And I was like, oh, they don't. Some people do, obviously, but I was naive.
I think there's also definitely something to be said about the fact that in the past, I'd say maybe 20, particularly 10 years, rap music, in particular grime music, drill music, has really found its way into the mainstream and has often been celebrated on the main stage. We've seen festivals, award shows, all of that. And to me, it's so interesting that this music will be celebrated and also kind of showcased, like, look, like, we're the UK, we're so multicultural, look, we're celebrating the fact that this rapper who's come from an ethnic minority background and a poor socioeconomic background, like, and now they've made it, and look, we're celebrating this, blah, blah, blah. And yet, all while this is happening, obviously behind the scenes, like, I looked at some other numbers on your website. Since 2005, over 100 cases in the UK in which rap music was used as evidence to convict people. In the last 3 years alone, at least 240 people have had their fate in court decided, at least in part, by their taste in music. So to me, it really shows as well how rap music seems to only be seen as something to be celebrated where it can be, where money can come from it, I would argue, because when it's like, oh, everyone's actually getting on board with this now, how can we actually capitalize on this the most? On the flip side of it, you would argue that, oh, if they actually cared about the music itself, surely they would care about the fact that it's ultimately being, like, suppressed at the other end of it, at the grassroots level, which is also where so many of these artists that do make it on the mainstream have come from. So, yeah, it's just such, like, a obvious example of how, like, fucked up everything is, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%. And also, we don't even think, like, those are already big numbers, and we think that's like tip of the iceberg numbers. Like I say, where there's not been enough research done, and like that research is literally done from like a small amount of money and people that we know asking other lawyers that they know and like trying to find it that way, because no one's tracking this. There's no like the government aren't tracking when rap music is used. Like this is all just talking to people and trying to figure it out. So we think there's way more cases than that. And definitely read the music thing. I mean, that's the thing. I was hired to work at a major label to make playlists that promote the major label's recorded content. And part of why I got the job is because rap music was becoming more popular. And I'm into basically all genres, including rap music. So they were like, okay, great. Here's your new job. And I was very much being paid to promote the rap and drill music and get it up the charts and get it as many streams as possible. That was my job, essentially, for the label. So then when I found out this was happening, I was like, so me, little white girl from the suburbs of Manchester, is being paid to promote this excellent music that I love. And at the same time, it's being used to send the artists or just other associated young people to prison. How is that, you know, how is that not something that I'm suddenly obsessed by and have to figure out and somehow has led us down this path that I'm doing, we're trying to stop it, you know? And then I really, really did think that other people, like, and there are other people, I'm not saying there aren't other people in the music industry who care as much as us, because they really are. We have loads of supporters, but just some of those big, especially, again, I worked in one of the top three labels, right? Like, they're one of the biggest corporations making the most money. But their business models are, the basis of their business model is we sign 15, 20 artists and we'll drop 19 of those and one of them will make us the money that counteracts all the money that we've put into everyone else. Like, that is the business model. And part of what I saw before I even figured this out was, like, I didn't like the way that artists in general are being treated, but specifically black artists are being treated worse than that. It's easier for them to throw them off, promise them the world, you know, we're going to get you this if you sign to us, we're going to get you, you're going to take over. And then they just don't. And then you flop a little bit, or you don't do as well as they hoped, and they just don't email you back. Like, it's very cutthroat. And obviously didn't like that, and then found out that it's getting worse, and they didn't. Like, essentially, one of the stories that I've told people is that we signed a drill rapper out of prison, would have been early 2020 or end of 2019, I think it was early 2020. Signed a drill rapper out of prison. Yeah, it will have been early 2020, because then we all went into lockdown, and when all the Black Lives Matter protests were happening, he had like posted just on his story saying Black Lives Matter, and somehow that got him, like, they tried to put him back on like probation and parole because of he said that. And I literally emailed like the CEO of our company saying, are we gonna like help out this artist that we've literally just signed from prison because he's being discriminated by the police? And he was like, oh my God, I didn't even know this. I spoke to the label, because this label's within the big label. I spoke to his specific label, and it turns out they knew about this and they didn't do anything. They were just gonna let it be. And I was like, this isn't my fucking job. This is fucked up. I'm not doing this anymore. Like, fuck this. It's dark. It's bad. It's bad. It's rough out there.
One of the things that Art Not Evidence is pushing for is new legislation. And you've actually drafted this bill, right?
Yeah. So the lawyers that we work with, they drafted this bill, criminal evidence brackets, creative and artistic expression bill, because we're not referring to rap music specifically in the bill, even though it is rap music that's predominantly being affected. But we know obviously this happened to rap music. Other black music genres have been criminalized in the past. It was grime, then it was drill. It'll be whatever's next, you know, in the future that we don't know exists yet. So we want it to be all creative and artistic expression. That's what this is about. It's about people being able to be free to express themselves in whatever way they want to, as long as it's not about crime. So the bill, yeah, essentially just is those safeguards saying it can't be prejudicial, it can't be bringing these racist stereotypes in, the music has to be relevant to the case, can't just be about bad character. it has to, they could, the prosecution has to prove that, like, this is meant to be literal, like you say, again, very, it has to be specific to other evidence, and that the court would have to bring in an independent expert to explain about the conventions of whatever the creative expression is. And we believe that if all those things were in, essentially, these people would be receiving a much fairer trial. That's what we're aiming for. You know, we're not, like you say, not eradicating this, not doing that. All the people who are in prison right now who have had rap music used against them have not had a fair trial because these things don't exist. And that's what everyone deserves.
It really seems like the bare minimum.
We're also just at the beginning of the journey. You know, like, we've only existed for not even like 2 years. And we've got MPs that support us, but as you know, the political climate is insane. Like, trying to get something passed in this parliament is insane. So we're putting a lot of other work into, like you say, getting more research and educating young people and youth workers and other people involved in the system in different ways as we simultaneously build up to properly tabling this in parliament. Because we do have Nadia Whittam MP. She's up for, like, representing us and tabling this in parliament when we have the opportunity to do so. But we do think it's possible. They've passed this law, like, similar law essentially in 2 states in America. So we do know it's possible. It's just how long it will take to get there. We'll find out.
All the more reason to keep going with it and actually keep pushing. Because like you say, if it's not grime, drill music, whatever, it will be the next thing. You mentioned as well that you obviously had your fundraiser on 24th September, and I'm glad to hear that went well. I understand that people can still donate if they wish to, so how would they go about doing that?
Yes, please. So there's a link in our bios of all our social media accounts, which is at Art Not Evidence. So you can catch us on all socials there. We've got our little, you know, like, link in bio link. And there's donation, different options for donating on there. Anything you can contribute will massively help us. Like I say, we've pretty much been ran on volunteers until a couple of weeks ago, where we've got someone working part-time for us now. We're hoping to get more staff time, more research, more time to strategize and achieve our goals, essentially. And unfortunately, we can't do that with no cash.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to me today. It's been a pleasure. You've obviously given out Art Not Evidence socials, which are simply at Art Not Evidence. But yeah, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, please follow us on Art Not Evidence, please. If you don't want to donate or can't donate, go to our website, artnotevidence.org. Or the link is in the same link as I mentioned before, and sign our open letter. So it's essentially, it's not a petition, but it's essentially the same thing. It's our open letter to the Secretary of State for Justice, explaining what we're advocating for. So when we do go to Parliament and table our bill, we can say we have this many thousands of members of the public and notable figures that have signed our letter. So the more people that sign our letter, the more Parliament will understand that the people want this too. So that would be really appreciated.